Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg.
And I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East,
and the Jewish world.
Hello, welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. It's Sunday, January 9th. I'm Jessica Steinberg. Shavua Tov. I'm joined today by founding Times of Israel editor David Horovitz and U.S. correspondent Jacob Magid. Hello to you both.
Hi, Jessica.
Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning. This morning, we'll talk about a few different things, starting with Omicron and where we are, the tragic accidental death of a four-year-old boy shot dead at a playground in a northern Arab village, and Jacob's conversation with Asaf Zamir, former tourism minister, now consul general in New York. David, let's start with you and some Omicron numbers, facts, and figures, because it is the subject that we're all thinking about. Where do things stand as of the headlines this morning?
Morning, Jessica. Yeah, we're all obsessing about COVID and its latest iteration. When I say we all, I'm sure, you know, everybody around the world. We're in Israel watching the confirmed new daily cases rise very rapidly. We're closing in on 20,000 new cases a day. The experts are telling us we're going to be at 50,000 cases a day within a few days, maybe by the end of this week, which we're learning to think maybe isn't so terrible if it is the case that Omicron is not causing serious illness. But we are also today now witnessing a jump in the serious cases. Now, the people listening from abroad, when I say that Israel now has about 206 serious cases, that may sound like a pretty low number, and it is a pretty low number even by Israeli standards. We've been much, much higher at the height of Delta, but it is nearly double where things were last week. We were just having an editorial meeting, and I was speaking to Nathan Jaffe, who covers COVID and health issues for us, trying to get a sense of whether Omicron marks the beginning of the end of COVID or not, or what. And he's sensibly cautious, and we still don't know. You know, we heard Israelis watching the news last night would have seen an expert from South Africa really, really pushing in the direction of things are getting better, that the wave caused by Omicron in South Africa, you know, she was making comparisons to flu, which are the kinds of comparisons that people have rejected quite angrily in the past, experts, when looking, you know, at COVID. But this was a credible person who's been through what they think is, what they're certain is the worst of Omicron. The British experience maybe is pointing in a similar direction, that it peaks and then it declines without massive rises in the number of seriously ill. The South African expert was saying that even their serious cases weren't as serious as the serious cases were with the Delta variant and so on. So I think in Israel, we're still in the we don't know yet mindset, hoping that some of the more optimistic summations that we're hearing from places like South Africa will reflect here. And one other factor here in the mix is that because Israelis were boosted fairly early, I'm generalizing, but you know, millions of people got their third booster fairly early. The question here is whether the boosters have worn off. And therefore, Israelis might turn out to be more vulnerable. You know, people will know that Israel did start now this fourth booster option for the most at risk, for people over 60. The take-up rate for that is pretty high. So as we have been really for 2 years, we don't quite know for sure. Maybe there's some grounds for optimism, but the latest figures, certainly, you know, a major rise by our standards, at least, in the number of seriously ill.
And of course, in terms of the economy, in terms of tourism, the skies were opened now, literally last night, today. And it's sort of interesting to wander around the city and to go in places and see how people are reacting, if they're sitting without masks, if they're having coffee, if they're shopping, if we're going to see many planes arriving full of tourists coming to Israel because the ban has been lifted.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with numbers coming at the airport yet. Too early to say. People are still taking this pretty seriously. You know, people are generally, I'm generalizing and anecdotally, but I think you'll agree, people do wear masks where they ought to. I think the last few days there seem to be fewer people about. As though, you know, there's a lot of people who maybe need to be in quarantine and so on. There have been long lines up and down those numbers, but there have been long lines at the test centers. You definitely know that Israel is grappling with a wave. We just don't know how serious it is yet.
Right. And remains to be seen. Okay. And David, on another very difficult story, tragic, about a little four-year-old boy shot dead during a gunfight in a playground in a northern Arab village, which obviously is part of this wave of violence in Arab towns and villages, and something that the government has vowed to fight.
Yeah, I don't know at what point the sense of outrage and this cannot go on becomes intolerable. But he wasn't shot dead. Amar Hujairat was not shot dead in a gunfight at a playground. Rather, he was playing in a playground with his mum. He's 4 years old. And he was shot dead by a quote-unquote stray bullet fired from apparently several hundred meters away. I mean, long bursts of gunfire that I heard on a video that didn't show the gunfire purported to be the incident. So lots of shots being fired and one quote-unquote stray bullet kills this four-year-old kid. It's beyond outrageous. It's emphatically not the first case in this. I don't know how to even describe it anymore. Ongoing spike of violence in the Arab sector. It's not the first case of somebody being killed by stray gunfire. Absolutely not.
No, just of a young child, right?
Well, yeah. So, you know, it's maybe the one that has been most affecting because you just see this little kid and he's playing with his mom in a playground. It's unthinkable. I think it's being taken seriously at a public demonstrable level. You've had the police chief and the defense minister going to visit the family. Whatever seriousness is being awarded this, it's not reflected in what's happening. Is the ongoing deaths? I mean, there's rarely a day or two that goes by without somebody being killed in the Arab sector. Often deliberately, as in some crime dispute with an easy resort to the fatal use of arms, or inadvertently because of that climate. And it's outrageous. It's part of a bigger concern that we have in Israel with law enforcement and an underfunded understaffed police force. But it's beyond intolerable. And this case, you know, if there is to be any crumb of comfort from this horror case, it will be, or you know, if it starts being taken more seriously and more resources are allocated and this becomes a greater priority. But it's supposedly a very high priority, except nothing is changing. We've written about it. Aaron Boxerman, our Arab Affairs correspondent, did a very powerful piece that we can include in the article about today's podcast, describing the core elements of this crime and what is going on in the Arab sector that is causing so much murder and inadvertent killing. But it is, like I say, beyond intolerable.
This is true. Okay, we're going to take a short break. Hey, it's Jessica Steinberg. If you have an important message you'd like to share with people who care deeply about Israel and the Jewish world, there's really no better way to do that than by advertising in our podcasts. Reach the Times of Israel's unique community with an audio ad. For more information, email ads@timesofisrael.com. That's ads@timesofisrael.com.
Shalom, dear listeners. This is Daniil Hartman.
And I'm Yossi Klein Halevi.
Together we host the podcast For Heaven's Sake from the Shalom Hartman Institute.
These have been some of the most challenging days for me personally, for Israel, and for the Jewish people. And one of the ways in which I've gotten through this is that I've found solace and meaning through discussions with my dear friend and study partner, Daniil Hartman.
And I hope that the Times of Israel listeners will join us as we continue to tackle the pressing questions facing the Jewish people here at For Heaven's Sake, which has become the number one Judaism podcast.
Well, Daniil, I'd also like to recommend the Identity Crisis podcast hosted by our colleague and friend Yehuda Kurtzer. It's a series of fantastic conversations with leading figures in Jewish life, thought, and culture.
You know, for decades, the Hartman Institute has been a preeminent destination for Jewish ideas and learning. Now you can access Hartman ideas on these chart-topping podcasts at shalomhartman.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. We're privileged to help guide you through these challenging and even unsettling times.
We're back. Jacob, let's turn to you. You have a story coming out on the site probably today, I would imagine, about Assaf Zamir, the former tourism minister, and who is now the consul general in New York. And the piece is about how he'll be approaching his work and what he's thinking about. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. It was a lovely hour-long conversation we had on the sidelines of the Israeli-America Council National Summit in Miami last month. Assaf is a pretty charismatic guy. He used to be the tourism minister. Before taking on this position, he left the government over protest of Benjamin Netanyahu. And now he just arrived in New York. And throughout the interview, every 5-10 minutes, people who were at the conference were coming up to him and asking for selfies. And then, of course, asking where was his wife, Maya Wertheimer, the famous Israeli influencer that I think people are much more having her there than him. But he's also a very charismatic guy that I think has his work cut out for him in New York. And we talked about what his goals are, and he said that he wants to change the matzav, the situation on college campuses, and kind of bring it back 10 years backwards, where he felt that the situation was much less volatile for pro-Israel students. And he talked about giving them the tools to be able to explain their position, and insisted that there shouldn't be a contradiction between being progressive on the one hand and being a Zionist on the other. I pushed him on what this meant, and he pointed to a recent interview from the Ben & Jerry's owners on Axios, where they were pushed as to why they don't, in addition to boycotting or no longer selling ice cream in the West Bank settlements, why don't they take similar boycott measures on other issues that they're outspoken about, be it on China or anti-abortion or voting rights. And their response was quite shocking. They basically said, we didn't really think about that. We'll have to think about that reason. And I asked him why he brought that up. And Assaf said, it shows that there isn't always a good response when you ask hard questions and when you dig in. Because the fact of the matter, he says, is that life is quite complex. And the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is also complex as well. And I asked him, okay, this is something I've often heard from Israeli officials or pro-Israel speakers that come onto campuses, and they usually make this pitch about how the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is very complex. And what I've noticed is a lot of students sitting and listening to those responses feel that it's kind of a cop-out, that just constantly saying what's with Israel's treatment of Palestinians, it's complex, that it's seen as an excuse. And when I told him this, he said, you're right. But what needs to change is that the way that the approach of these officials that they've been making these comments has not been right. The buildup was wrong. Their preparations was wrong. And they came up at it with the self-righteousness that also turns people off. And he says that a new approach needs to broaden the tent of what is considered legitimate criticism of Israel. And when you create an environment where not every single criticism is seen as given by someone who's an enemy, then you're able to create a situation where you are able to make this argument in terms of complexity and have it taken better. So there was a lot of other topics that were discussed that I look forward to publishing in the coming days.
Is it usual for the New York Council General to handle issues like Jewish kids on college campuses? Is that usually one of the tasks?
Yeah, I mean, I think he obviously has a specific region that he covers, and it's not just New York, it's Philadelphia and surrounding cities, and it's actually the largest consul in America. But I think in general, that's the foreign ministry's job, and he's part of the foreign ministry, which is to represent Israel wherever necessary. And that's, I think, their goal right now is college campuses, because that's the future.
One more quick thing from you. I know that you also wrote about Israel bringing a resolution aimed at combating Holocaust denial before the United Nations General Assembly. This was obviously from Ambassador Gilad Erdan. Tell us a little bit about that. What does it mean? I know that we're approaching several Holocaust remembrance days at the end of the month.
Right. So if this passes, it'll be the first resolution sponsored by Israel that passes the General Assembly since 2005. When they passed a resolution, or the General Assembly passed an Israeli resolution marking January 27th, the anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp, as International Holocaust Remembrance Day. And quite a few countries around the world observe that day on January 27th. And on January 20th, which is the 80th anniversary of the WANSI conference, which was when the final solution or decided to move on it. That's when they're hoping to do this vote on a resolution condemning Holocaust denial, defining it using the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition, IHRA, for what is Holocaust denial, and then calling on countries to take steps to stamp it out, and also on demanding social media networks also remove posts that fall under the IHRA definition of what is Holocaust denial. Erdogan said that he's hoping that it'll pass overwhelmingly, maybe 160 countries at least out of 193 member states of the UN, including those he hopes that don't have relations with Israel. He mentioned briefly Saudi Arabia as being someone he said, I don't know why they wouldn't want to support something like this. So this is lobbying that's been going on for the past few months. And now there's in the coming days, there's a write-up of the resolution. Minor edits are made if Israel agrees to them. And then a vote on January 20th, which would be rather unprecedented if it passes.
All right. Keeping fingers crossed. Thank you, David. Thank you, Jacob, for joining us on today's Daily Briefing.
Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you.
Sure. And just remember, listeners, you can go have a listen to Amanda Borchel-Don's Times Will Tell from Friday about the wacky world of archaeology. Obviously, we'll be back tomorrow with the Daily Briefing. Looking forward to having you with us then. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from The Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.